Last week, I mentioned how I enjoy social media, particularly Facebook, because of the humor content I often see on my daily news feed. It keeps me laughing, and I like laughing. But there are a lot of other things to be seen in small snippets. Let's face it, Facebook isn't the place to share the great American novel. Political posts that I agree with and ones that I don't that can lead to feelings of anger. As a former classroom teacher, I can't begin to tell you how much I've enjoyed being able to keep up with former students and to see how their lives have unfolded, as well as some very dear friends from college that distance in the years have conspired to pull us apart. There are also a great many educational things that pop up on Facebook. Education is the primary focus, for example, of the Refuge Facebook page, for which I'm the administrator. Just this past Monday, I kicked off the week with a post about how fast moose antlers grow each summer. That's a pound per day, in case you're wondering. I also see educational posts from other places. For example, a friend shared a post of a stone monument, granite seems likely, that remembered some of the many sacrifices that were made by the people who signed the Declaration of Independence. That's the kind of stuff that it pays to remember, in my opinion. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. That monument. My buddy did not know where it was located. He merely shared a post he saw. Nor have I taken the time to try and track it down myself. But the words on it, the sacrifices listed, are facts that I've read about previously. And make no mistake, those who signed the Declaration knew what they were getting into. The last sentence of the Declaration, right before the John Hancocks were delivered, is worded as follows: "And for the support of this Declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." Frankly, every time I read those words, they give me goosebumps. Can you imagine how serious, how somber, and yet freeing the mood in that room must have been? Think through the meaning. We agree to support this Declaration, relying on the protection of God, and we're willing to commit our very lives, all that we own, and our honor to do so. And they meant every word of it. By the way, my wording there that they put down their John Hancocks on it was meant to be funny, because the Declaration is where that phrase got its start. It's believed that as president of that congressional body, John Hancock was likely the first man to sign it, and he did so with a flourish. Okay, so what's all this somber talk of the Declaration and such? Well, the Declaration, if you'll remember, was step one. We told King George III to go play in traffic. We were tired of being taxed unfairly. We did not appreciate how we were being treated, we being the colonists at the time. And we hit the point where we decided we could do it better on our own, thank you very much. Oh, and with that Declaration, hey, we're willing to fight for the right to do so. The Declaration was our intentions, spelled out in address to George, but also so the rest of the world knew what we planned to do. It was ambitious and optimistic beyond what words can convey, and it worked. So again, why all this today? Where's the talk of pollinators and birds and moose antlers? Look ahead to next week. Tuesday is the 4th of July, a day off for a lot of people. Here's the thing. Without the freedoms that were gained when the Declaration set things in motion, none of what we have today is possible. So yeah, today let's do a bit of reminiscing about how we got here, ahead of next week's big birthday bash. As I said, the Declaration of Independence was a letter to the King of England. It was written in principle by Thomas Jefferson and edited by a number of his colleagues, to include Benjamin Franklin and John Adams. It was adopted by the Second Continental Congress on July 4, 1776, hence our holiday. The Declaration told England that the 13 colonies at war, well, actual fighting began the year before, with England intended to no longer be considered British subjects, but instead to be a collection of independent and sovereign states. This was the first step toward the formation of a new nation, our nation. The Declaration listed out 27 particular grievances we had with King George III, and that we thought them egregious enough to warrant the actions we took. In the years since, the Declaration has become one of our country's most cherished symbols, and the wording, some of the most well-known words in the English language. I am certain most of us remember at least parts of it from a history class in our past. If it seems a little fuzzy, indulge me as I read the first two paragraphs. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government, and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. I won't go into the 27 grievances. You can look those up on your own if you so choose. Suffice to say, we took them pretty seriously, whereas we fought an 8-year war because we just couldn't take it anymore. Again, the author of what I just read was a then 33-year-old Thomas Jefferson, the man who would become our third president. He worked on drafts of the Declaration between June 11th and June 28th of 1776. It was edited by some of his most trusted colleagues, including the aforementioned Benjamin Franklin and John Adams. At 33, I was about to become a father, and I wasn't sure if I was ready. Jefferson, at the same age, was helping to birth a nation. By the way, Jefferson was perhaps a bit more moderate, and not as fiery as some of his colleagues. That said, here is something he stated in the fall of 1775. "Believe me, dear sir, there is not in the British Empire a man who more cordially loves a union with Great Britain than I do. But, by the God that made me, I will cease to exist before I yield to a connection on such terms as the British Parliament propose. And in this, I think I speak the sentiments of America." Indeed, he did. Obviously, things worked out, and hindsight shows us how that happened. David defeated Goliath over 200 years ago, and we're here today because of it. However, if you're going to spit in the eye of a bully, you have to know that consequences are likely. 56 men signed the Declaration, probably fully aware of that last sentence and the prospect of dark times ahead. But sign it they did. In the years that followed, 5 signers were captured by the British as traitors and tortured ahead of being killed. 12 had their homes and all they owned burned to the ground. 4 had sons captured and killed. 9 of them not only signed, but fought in the war and lost their lives fighting. 24 were lawyers, 11 were merchants, 9 were farmers, and all of them were well educated. They knew full well the possible outcome of putting their name at the bottom of the page, and did it anyway because they believed it was the right thing to do. For many people, the 4th of July is a very welcome day off, often draped in really great weather. It's a chance to do more stuff outside, which is outstanding. And, by the way, there's your tie today to the outdoors with today's episode. Enjoy your day, however you choose to spend it. but do take a moment to remember that people died to give you the freedoms you have, and it started with a declaration, a letter, for which many paid dearly, and in full knowledge, that might be the case even as they put their names to paper. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake, provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.